Thank you for the invitation, and I'll try to overlook the Chapel Hill Association, but we're 30 miles down the road in Raleigh, and I don't think they grow very many things outside. Relative to the variation available, the U.S. germplasm base is pretty narrow. That's not been particularly troubling in the past. We've continued to make progress at very rapid rates, as you have seen in presentation after presentation. I am not going to show you the famous graph, but there are problems, particularly among female lines. Basically, almost all the female lines of commercial hybrids trace back in one way or another to B73. If they don't trace back to B73, they trace back to B37. If they don't trace back to B37, they trace back to something that came out of a pioneer hybrid. And that is basically the summary of inbred female usage in this country at the moment, and it extends to virtually all parts of the temperate world. I'd like to talk a little bit about, first, about an inbred line or two, then about some recurrent selection work that has been going on at NC State for some time. And finally, I'd like to say just a few brief words about GEM, which I really think is probably the most important and the biggest driving force to increase diversity in U.S. commercial corn breeding. NC State is not a new line. It was identified by Randy Holley in his PhD thesis way back when. It was an all-tropical line. It was the first all-tropical line, so far as I know, that was ever used in a commercial hybrid. Now, the companies that used this in a commercial hybrid are no longer with us. I hope there's not a cause and effect there. But basically, NC-296 generally increases the yield of almost any commercial hybrid that it's crossed with. And here is a small amount of data. It's certainly not all the data we have, but it's fairly typical. Sometimes the increases are a bit larger than that. Sometimes they're a bit smaller. But on the left are a bunch of hybrids which were important in their day, which was the late 1990s. Early 2000s, crosses with 296, as in the sort of the middle column. I guess it's in white. When you're colorblind, you're never quite sure what you're looking at. And in the far column are crosses with NC-346, which is just a sister line of NC-296. If you look at the averages down near the bottom of the slide, in this case, there was about 7/10 of a ton per hectare increase on average with these particular commercial hybrids. Now, this is an old slide, but since I've tried to work with GEM, and GEM is really dominated by, in many ways, by the commercial sector, there has been pressure to use more recent testers than what we used. When I started the breeding program at Raleigh, I started with a bunch of rather old testers. My stiff stock tester was A632 by B73. I'd still be perfectly happy with that tester. It's a very good one. Our non-stiff stock tester was LH38 by Missouri 17, and I'm quite happy with that one. And we tested our all-tropical lines with B73 by Missouri 17, and I am still quite happy with that tester. But other people aren't, and so we have tried to switch. And from time to time, we try to test new potential testers. And in this case, we were trying to test them with some lines we knew something about. And these particular testers happened to come from Pioneer. And as you can see, this work was actually completed just this fall. We actually managed to get the data together and analyzed and summarized. And NC-296 still does reasonably well. NC-514 is a close relative of 296. NC-400 is independently derived, but when I say independently derived, it came from the same five-parent diallel that produced NC-296. And the five-parent diallel was possible because in the early 1970s, CIMMYT published worldwide yield trials of virtually all available tropical hybrids. And I used those yield trials to select materials to start with for a crossing project that had absolutely nothing to do with corn breeding. It was a project that was attempting to determine whether or not maize hybrids or maize accessions from different areas of Latin America had different genes for photoperiod sensitivity. And we worked on this for half a dozen years, and finally a few things segregated out that had reasonable maturity, and those things were the basis for Randy Hawley's thesis, which led to the release of NC-296. Now, NC-296 has a number of flaws. It's certainly not the world's best inbred, but one of its flaws is it tends to be tall. Now, we didn't think the yield trials were biased by this because it was being tested against other things, which also were reasonably tall. But nonetheless, nagging us in the back of our minds was, well, is 296, are the 296 hybrids shading out other stuff? Well, purely by accident, 296 got in a strip trial, which was actually run by Pioneer. And they actually published the data. But this, I think, demonstrates that we didn't need to worry a great deal about strip trial biases and plant height biases, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Paul Nelson, a year or two ago, sort of summarized the variability in XPVP lines, which are pretty much representative of what's in commercial breeding. And for the most part, this is a principal components analysis of some SNPs, a fair number of SNPs, actually. And for the most part, it looks like commercial stuff and U.S. and public materials are very similar, and certainly if you look back through the history of how commercial materials were derived, that's no great surprise. Now, there was one exception, and that's the Iodent group, which has been kicking around commercial breeding circles for many years, but has largely been absent from public breeding. This was basically a personal project of Raymond Baker at Pioneer, who took lines that were released in the 30s, worked with them for, God knows, 20 or 30 years, before they actually began contributing to corn breeding. And I suspect that today the Iodent group is probably more important than, say, the Lancaster group in commercial corn breeding. And it appears on both sides of the pedigree. Now, you can certainly exploit the iodents, but that's not going to add any really new alleles to the germplasm base. They're already out there. And if you want to look around on how to try to increase the yields of temperate maize using new alleles, well, the XPVPs would be easy to use, but there's not much there. Tropical inbreds and tropical hybrids can be used without too much difficulty. It's half a dozen years at least to adapt them to the United States, unless you use some sort of back crossing system, which might reduce it from 6 years to 5 years. Tropical synthetics are a little more difficult because they've not had the history of inbreeding. There tends to be an awful lot of inbreeding depression in tropical materials. And if you're so courageous as to work with land races, you're talking about probably a 30-year cycle. It would be my guess. My success with land races has been next to nil. I have tried, and tried fairly hard. Now, Arnold Hollauer has said, and this is not a direct quote, but most genetic variation is unfavorable. And my experience, and I think the experience of everyone else, says that this is true even when you're crossing the best of the best. And if what you're doing is crossing things that are less than the best, things become even more difficult. I joke with the professor who teaches plant breeding in our department, because he keeps telling people that if you're going to make progress in plant breeding, you always cross best by best. And my argument is, that's not really a challenge. It's a lot more challenge to try to beat everyone else when you're crossing bad by bad. And that's much more interesting. Now, we have been doing some sort of back-of-the-nursery recurrent selection since the early 1980s, when I actually took over the corn breeding program, and a surprise to me and a surprise to most of the people in my department, I think. But in 2008, there were a couple events that I didn't think would ever happen. You know about one of them. That was political, and I'm not going to talk about it. But the second was a recurrent selection yield trial, which we were running with a population called Trophy from Tropical Hybrid, an abbreviation. We'd been through seven rather unremarkable cycles of selection using S1 for selection. And I had a really exceedingly good student by the name of Mike Gines, who wanted to do a PhD thesis on a very traditional plant breeding topic. He had done a master's thesis using some molecular work. And Mike evaluated our progress from selection in the two populations that we were using in alternate years, and suggested that, yes, we were making progress, but our means were lower than commercial means, and our rate of progress was lower than the commercial rate of progress. And so we'd better either quit or change our approach. And he suggested using top cross selection, which had several advantages, which he enumerated, and persuaded me to try something new. So we tested 90 entries of this particular synthetic in 2008. We crossed it to what I will call Hybrid X from one of the big four, with their permission and encouragement. And all 90 crosses had higher yields than Hybrid X, and many of them out-yielded all the commercial checks. Now, I've been working with exotic corn for a good many years. I have run lots of experiments where every experimental entry was lower than the lowest adapted commercial check. Those results wouldn't surprise me at all. But these results were sufficiently shocking that I had trouble believing them. So we did several things. Among other things, we got a different hybrid from a different company and sort of started over again. But this is sort of a very brief summary of the 2008 stuff. The mean of the 90 actually out-yielded several commercial checks, and it certainly out-yielded the top cross parent, Hybrid X. You'd expect the mean to, since all the entries did. So we retested in 2010. It takes us a while to react. We're not real swift. And we put the highest yielding entries in a couple experiments paired with Hybrid X. And we put sort of the second best entries in a single experiment compared to Hybrid X. And typically, they raised the yield of Hybrid X by about 125%. Which verifies what we saw in 2008, but maybe Hybrid X wasn't very special. I tell people we have one-year wonders, we have two-year wonders, we have three-year wonders, and I suspect that Hybrid X might have been a three-year wonder, although we have looked at both of its parents and they look fine. So this is the material that we looked at in 2010. These were not really inbred materials, so we derived a number of families, a little over 30 from the best ones. We intercrossed the best ones and top-crossed those things. And then we intercrossed the sort of second best ones and top-crossed those. And of these 120 or 30 hybrids, they all yielded more than hybrid X, which was no great surprise since we had seen this elsewhere. But 92% of them out-yielded hybrid Y. And we knew something about hybrid Y. It had actually won a few yield trials in North Carolina, and we had used it for other purposes, and it's a good hybrid. So I was a bit surprised by that. Here's some of the data. Now, this is just showing you the best stuff. I'm not going to show you the worst stuff. The white line in the middle of the graph is a cross with hybrid X. This is one of our tests of what went on in 2008. And the top three are from one of the better lines in 2008. And they're performing quite well. This slide is actually a set of top crosses of recombinants of the second best material in 2008. Now, what's best for us and what's second best for us is a debatable point. If I tested a particular inbred line from now until the day I die, I might be able to detect a 5 bushel per acre difference in North Carolina. North Carolina is quite variable. It's not like the Midwest. And so our rankings of things are not very accurate, to put it mildly. But at any rate, these families also out-yielded both hybrid X and hybrid Y and did quite well against a couple of pretty good commercial hybrids that are widely used in North Carolina. So we now have some temperate-adapted all-tropical inbreds that can increase yields of commercial materials. And we now have at least 100% tropical population that should recurrently produce such inbreds on a fairly routine basis. Now, I basically started this in 1983. I did a little bit of work before that, but I officially became a corn breeder in 1983. And had someone told me that this would be possible in 1983, I would have said that their educational institution probably should have been Dix Hill, which is close to where we work, instead of at NC State. Now, I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about GEM, and it's going to be a very few minutes because I don't have a great deal of time. Most of you may already be familiar with it, but if you're not, GEM basically is a public-private cooperative endeavor where superior tropical materials from whatever source you can lay your hands on are crossed to proprietary inbreds. These crosses are made by private companies. The F1s come in part to NC State, and in part they go back to a second company where they get back crossed to a related private line. In other words, if the original cross was a stiff stock cross, the second, the so-called back cross, would also be with a stiff stock line. The 25% tropical materials go to Iowa State, and I'm not going to say another word about those. The 50% materials come to NC State, and at NC State, we proceed to inbreed them very lightly, top cross them in early generations. The top crosses are run not only at NC State, but at many public and private institutions all across the central and southern United States. And the best performing of these are first released to the cooperators in GEM, which basically includes almost everyone, and after a year or two, they are distributed freely by the North Central Plant Introduction Station at Ames. Now, in Raleigh at least, we have tried to keep the percentage use of hybrids and accessions at about 50-50. In other words, we have had access to tropical hybrids, mostly from DeKalb, and we've had access to accessions, all of which had promising initial data, so that we have attempted to place equal emphasis on accessions and hybrids, and that's been done deliberately with the thought that it would be fairly easy to derive materials from hybrids, be rather difficult to derive things from accessions. This happens to be an accession from Brazil. This work was actually done by Marty Carson before he left for Minnesota. And he developed a series of lines out of PE1 from Brazil, top-crossed them to FR992, FR1064, a stiff stock tester, and these have looked very promising indeed. Now, to look at a few derivatives of hybrids, the hybrids which have been most successful have been the hybrids from Thailand and the hybrids from Brazil. Somehow the hybrids from Mexico, which DeKalb provided us, have not performed quite as well as the Thai and Brazilian hybrids. I don't know quite why. But these are performing quite well. Now, this is an experiment that was grown in 31 different environments. I think the data are reasonably reliable. However, the data were assembled and analyzed in Raleigh, so I thought we ought to at least present some data that was assembled and analyzed elsewhere. And this is a small set of data from Monsanto. The original slide was made, I basically adapted this from a slide from Walter Trevisan. The original slide was much larger with more characters and more hybrids, but these were the best of the hybrids in the trial. This was tested all across Monsanto's locations, and many of these locations, corn borer and rootworm, were important, so traits were important, and hybrids with traits did much better than hybrids without traits. And the GEM crosses were without traits, but they did quite well. So I think you can see that there is promise in the GEM material. I think it is being used, and I think it will be the likely source of new exotic material in commercial hybrids. And with that, I'll close. Thank you very much. Be glad to try to answer questions.
Any questions?
Good.
Do you know, what's happening in private industry? Do you know if they're using, and are any of these in commercial hybrids now?
Private industry has changed so much in the last 15 years in terms of secrecy that it is virtually impossible to get information about usage. I'll give one example. 15 years ago, I could send a postcard to the president of Pioneer and ask for tropical hybrid X, Y, and Z, and in a matter of 10 days, the seeds would be on my desk with a letter saying good luck. If I tried that today, well, first of all, I don't even know who the president of Pioneer is. It's a lawyer, an accountant, or something. And I might have to send it to Wilmington instead of to Johnston. But I feel quite sure that the letter probably wouldn't even get an answer. But if it got an answer, it certainly would not be followed up with seeds. And if it were followed up with seeds, it would be followed up with page after page after page of stuff that I'm not authorized to sign. The last such agreement I signed, that was sent to me, asked me to waive the sovereign rights of the state of North Carolina. Now, maybe the governor can do that. I don't know what sovereign rights the state of North Carolina has, but I'm not about to waive them.